Hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Startup Shaman podcast, where we explore the intersection of higher consciousness, startups, and enlightened entrepreneurship. The episode today is a recording of my conversation with my friend, Jack Butler, who is a social entrepreneur, speaker, coach, and a deep thinker. I hope you enjoy it. So Jack, I really always enjoy talking to you. You have a really deep knowledge of integral theory and a lot of personal development work and Enneagram and your Diamond Heart, and it's just really fascinating. And I really see you working as a coach with a lot of particular entrepreneurs and kind of people who are really going on and doing things in the world. And so I'm just really curious to ask you, what do you intend to happen in the kind of work you do? What do you allow or what do you unlock in people that allows them to be more powerful?
That's a powerful question. I'm really inviting people to come into a more full expression of who they are. So I'm at this intersection of deeper inner work and expression or authentic purpose in the world. And as much as possible, I'm an invitation for people to bring all of themselves out to play. And so I'm often orienting to the places where people don't feel full permission, they don't feel full expression, and how to really integrate. I mean, you're talking about integral theory. A lot of this is how to integrate parts of ourselves that we maybe haven't paid attention to, that we didn't get a download in our childhood as to how to do it, and that we've actually got to grow capacity. And I sort of hold a view that says a lot of the deeper developmental work that we may want to undertake is actually to bring up the floor on our trailing edges of development. Mm-hmm. So that's not always sexy work. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily in the zone of genius or gift.
Right. And so just to for our audience, so by when you say bring up the floor, I imagine what you're saying is really look into and address some of the maybe parts that are not our strengths, that are things that we struggle with, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why do you think that's important?
My sense is that they're always a drag on the system. Mm-hmm. And it's not about making them as strong as your strengths. It's more to acknowledge that if we have a problem receiving attention, or if we have a problem giving acknowledgement, or if it's not native to us to look after what could be referred to as our self-preservation, like taking care of rest and routine and well-being, then those things will always tend to show up pervasively in our lives. So at a certain point in time, I've even taken my own experience, I think I was happy to be a busy entrepreneur. I used to get off on sharing the story, like how I would eat breakfast before I went to bed, because that was time efficient.
Right.
People were like, whoa, that's so cool.
Right, yeah, and in some way that's actually, totally quite admired and glorified in our culture.
It's yeah.
Like you feel really good, you feel, things are happening, and there's a high that you get off of that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so like, what's the but?
the but is, and I'm not sure that any Western medicine practitioner or Ayurvedic practitioner or anyone that just knows anything about health, or even just my own experience of health in that context, that's really valuing taking good care of myself. And in that scenario, it's like I'm always on, and I'm actually generally working from a place of feeling kind of stressed, kind of preoccupied, and kind of like I'm habitually overcommitted. Mm-hmm. So if you really drop in, slow down a little bit, and that is authentically in full consciousness the life that you choose, have at it. Mm-hmm. My sense is that for most of us, when we slow down and we get deeper contact with what's really going on, we notice that even though we like to tell the story that we're driven and ambitious and or that we want to serve the world and that's why we do all the stuff that we do, that there are actually other patterns that are running us. Mm. And it's not like we're actually in control in the way that we think we are. So that's the deeper developmental inquiry, is what is really having you show up in those ways, and actually understanding those structures, structures of ego, structures of superego.
Yeah, that's a really great point that I just want to underscore. I think that's really important, is that for a lot of us, even the people, for us who are, quite ambitious and quite smart and even quite rational, we often overlook to the, like you said, what really runs us, you know, the yes. degree to which often, you know, hidden patterns, hidden fears, hidden resentments or reactivity that, you know, that really dictate subtly and maybe not so subtly what we do and how we do it, you know, what we focus on and what we avoid. So I think that's a really
yes.
interesting point.
Yeah. Yeah, my sense is that the more humble we are about that, the more we can really notice what's going on, and that they're just layers to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Noticing the things that were, for example, so taken care of in your childhood that you didn't really have to learn how to do them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or conversely,
mm-hmm.
the things that were so overlooked in your childhood mm-hmm. that you have no real blueprint or reference for them.
Absolutely.
So there's also this kind of interesting edge for me between excavating and metabolizing the undigested material of the past, which is generally a bit more of a therapeutic orientation,
mm-hmm.
and how that creates more freedom for us, you know, our ability to be and express and, you know, really follow the unfolding thread of our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and another interesting layer of that is that I'm noticing just in my own experience too that often in certain intelligences we develop, certain capacities, they come in as a evolutionary creative response at some point in our life. Like if we maybe weren't taken care of very well by our parents, we develop a sort of capacities that allow us to be more autonomous and
yes,
more kind
like
of aggressively take
yeah.
things into our own hands. And that's really wonderful. And there's a point almost inevitably in a further development where we hit up a ceiling of being able to only orient to life in that particular way, using those set of capacities. And so,
yes.
you know, we realize that there's a way in which we can only go so far with those, and we need to really start to lean into often the other side of that particular polarity, which is, for instance, in that case, to really learn to be able to ask for help and lean into more of whether it's a team or a community. You know?
Yes.
So there's kind of this interesting way in which what has worked for us before, as we become older and maybe take on more impactful projects in the world, we realize that there's other capacities that need to come online, right?
That would be right.
Yeah. We talked about the developmental dynamics that happen, how as we evolve and deepen and understand different parts of ourselves and our different hidden patterns that often operate us.
Yes.
There's certainly a sense of, I would say, a wholeness that emerges, a greater fulfillment and greater relaxation into yourself. And
mm-hmm.
You also mentioned play, the ability to be able to be more playful and to play more. Right? That's a very interesting thing. I'm curious if we were to focus it more a bit on, you know, being an entrepreneur or doing impactful things in the world or just being effective in the world. How do you see, is there a correlation there? Do you feel that that kind of deepening does help us become more effective, more powerful? And how does that work in your experience?
Mm, that's a great question. I think that's a question that isn't necessarily answered by a lot of the communities that focus on spirituality and inner work,
mm-hmm.
because the life that they're orienting towards isn't necessarily a high impact entrepreneurial life. I think that's a question for our generation to be living into, and living into the tension of that.
Mm.
I don't know
that's
if there's
great.
Enough data points on it.
Yeah.
My experience is that you can marshal your energy more effectively
mm-hmm.
in a certain way if you notice that, oh, every time I do this thing, I'm actually, it makes me really tired because I get so into it, I end up staying up really late, and then I'm kind of, you know, I'm too tired the next day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, I think, makes you more effective. The challenge, if you will, is that once people are more conscious of how they're showing up in the world and where they want to really put their attention, and they get more in contact with being and having more spaciousness in their life, they tend to want to work a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So net, they may not be more effective because they're not willing to hustle around the clock
right,
in the same way, but it might be that they have a bit more bang for their buck.
Yeah.
potentially.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that shifts is that there's less of an orientation to, you know, profit in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Profit, money making as a real valuable project of self.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't so many well-worn paths of effectiveness in the sort of new culture and in the new economy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually playing a game that's kind of harder to win in mm-hmm. certain ways.
Right.
Or at least the established pathways aren't so much there. So
right.
the self-authoring life has more complexity.
Mm-hmm.
It has more options. It's not like, you know, if you and I are into athletics, you know, you and I know the game, right? It's the 100 meters, it's the 400 meters. It's really obvious from the junior age right up to the senior age how you win.
Mm-hmm.
If you and I are playing a game of higher consciousness entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
what is the hallmark of that?
Yeah,
you know,
right. What's the metric? What's the goal? What's the time to beat, you know, right?
Yes.
Right.
And in some ways, if we talk about conscious business, you know, one way of talking about it is triple bottom line. You know, people plan a profit. That's already more, you know, we've got a more complex scorecard. If we're talking about some level of inner consciousness that we're bringing to our work, it's a very subjective thing, firstly. And I'm curious, once people unwind a whole set of patterns, whether they would be orienting to the same sort of external impact in quite the same way.
Yeah.
There would certainly be more of a sense of life being able to have its way with you mm-hmm. rather than you needing to take life by the horns and make something of it.
Yeah. In my experience also, it can become, as we develop more, there's a way in which it actually becomes more intense and overwhelming. That's one of the byproducts, if you will, is that we start to feel more, we start to become aware of more nuance, more complexity, the different, complexity of how people that we work with think and operate from, and the different perspectives. And so, at least initially, it can become actually more complex, you know, because and more overwhelming to make these decisions, right? Because it's no longer just, you know, the old egocentric paradigm where it's like what I say goes and this is what's going to happen.
Yes.
All of a sudden we start to become really aware of our inner self, the impact that we're making, you know, the external and the internal, if you will, and
yes.
So all the different dimensions. It definitely feels at first like it's just a little bit, we're kind of opening a Pandora's box, if you will, of different of complexity and intensity, but things become better. One dimension is I think there's a greater degree of fulfillment as we do become more self-aware. Like there's a clarity that emerges. There's a bit less of that noise, that static of just overwhelm of about the world. There's just a little bit more, or sometimes a lot more, settling, where we can kind of see things more clearly.
Yes,
we can see. The things that we used to be anxious about, we can just see them kind of, this anxiety kind of fall away and the dust kind of settles. We kind of be centered and clear, both with ourselves, with our own patterns, but also with other people's, and we can see our other people's ego patterns more clearly. We can see when somebody's trying to just talk circles around us, and we kind of just get to the essence much more quickly, you know. And I think that things happen more quickly the more sort of essential we are. When we're able to really speak from integrity, from alignment, there's just the way in which things land more quickly, we are understood more quickly, our decisions are more spontaneous, you know. So these are some of the things that I see. Does that resonate with you?
Having more of a handle on what is actually going on, so seeing more clearly in that way, that resonates with me. I feel a little bit, because these are such new cultural memes, that we're having to practice quite a lot. So I may become more aware of what is between us in our, you know, in an interpersonal dynamic, or the we space as we call it, and I may be more aware of my impact on you, I may be more impressionable to you, your impact on me. And then there's so much richness that comes in that, that we might start to spend more time on a whole sort of set of things that just aren't even in our awareness previously. Whether we're more straightforwardly understood, I don't know about that.
And maybe to clarify, like, I don't know if I necessarily say that we are understood as a whole, because I mean, I think if anything, we become more aware of the complexity of the inner complexity of myself and others.
Yes.
But the things I speak tend to, at least in my experience, there's a way that I can start to speak in a way that's just more direct, and part of it is just being aware of the context. I mean, oftentimes, you know, this happens a lot in, for instance, in teams or with co-workers where, you know, people just saying something, but there's some like underlying frustration underneath, and maybe there are some issues of power struggles,
we'll say power dynamics,
yeah, or just these old patterns of, you know, maybe resistance or resentment. And so I do think that there's a way in which we are able to, with the greater awareness, like start to hone in on what's really happening in a particular interaction, for instance, right? Like we can,
yes,
we can see.
So like we're metabolizing more truth of what's,
yeah,
actually going,
exactly,
on.
Exactly, and we can, that's, see that the content, but also the context of the conversation, and continue,
yep,
to stay in more connection in the conversation. So, at least in that example, it feels like sometimes things become more effective, more we can get to the truth quicker.
Yes,
and I should also, I feel like in the interest of transparency, I want to name my bias. I do deeply believe that this inner transformation does make us, maybe effective is not the right word, but there's something more fulfilling and essential happens out of what we do and how we do it. So
yes,
there's a way that I do kind of have vested interest, because I'm super fascinated with this stuff and I've seen the transformation in my life. So just in the interest of naming like the patterns, I feel like I should name it in this conversation as well. And I imagine that's true for you as well.
I think there's a lot of us that want to believe that. I think when you say maybe effectiveness isn't the metric, I think it would be interesting to look at what other sort of metrics, data points, perspectives we can hold around that. And I think these things do take time, as I was trying to point to, like, we are part of an emerging culture.
Yeah.
That I think even 5-10 years down the line, the sort of things that we're talking about now will have had much more time to metabolize in more people, there'll be more experience, there'll be, you know, more podcasts, more, you know, ways that we can orient to how to do this effectively. If you look at a book like Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, which in some ways, from a smart dynamics perspective, is a sort of orange hack. You know, that the orange meme, the,
yeah,
modernist meme, has been around for a few hundred years at this point, and he's taking an old principle, the 80-20 principle, which has been around for about 100 years, and really kind of dialing something in. And you know, I think the whole orientation to your life as an inquiry means that the way you hold effectiveness is kind of different. Like, I might have a great day at work because I land certain learnings about myself, which may not look in terms of outputs like an effective day at work, but globally it might be a really effective, mm-hmm, leadership development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. Actually, this would be a great time, because you mentioned the word orange in your response just,
yes,
now, and I would, maybe this is a great opportunity to just kind of introduce very briefly what we mean by orange. It's referring to,
yes,
integral theory model.
Well, I'm referring to orange as one stage in spiral dynamics. Spiral dynamics and integral theory are pointing to similar things. They're not exactly the same. So spiral dynamics is this theory of individual and cultural development that posits that there are predictable, generalizable developmental stages. So there are some territories where the idea of developmental stages is pretty uncontentious. Like, if you're a developmental psychologist, or you're looking at the cognitive development of a child, it's well understood since Piaget and others that, you know, how a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old think about the world is differently. And so we're taking that idea but looking at it in terms of individual and cultural development, that there are just different ways that people look at the world, different, really different value sets that they hold. So what they think is valuable, what they think life is about, what the sort of greater game of life is about. And so there's a whole set of them. But if you took just three of them that perhaps predominate most in our culture, which in spiral dynamics would be blue and orange and green. So blue is a more traditional worldview, orange is a modernist worldview, green is a postmodern worldview, and they all have different sort of attitudes. So you know, blue is a kind of traditional conservative, kind of respect for what works, and there's a set of sort of political and often religious and other things that come out of that way of viewing the world. And I was talking about the orange worldview, which is you know, much more oriented to rationality. It's the traditional paradigm of corporate America, in a sense. It's sort of like maximize, optimize, profit, you know, and rationality. So it's scientific. It tends to be atheist, although in America it's slightly different how kind of religion gets held here. But it's all to do with you know, homo economicus, like thinking of us as human beings as rational actors in a rational kind of way, that we're gonna maximize the certain outcomes. And culturally there are certain outcomes like money or status that people might traditionally optimize for, but you in a way could be optimizing for anything. And so when people talk about the sort of life hack culture, when they're optimizing for certain things, that tends to be a bit more of an orange paradigm, I think, which is like, oh, you know, how can we, you know, you see this sort of thinking coming into the charity world, like you want to give $5 a month, you want to know where's the best place that you can give your $5 a month. That's, you know, that's a sort of orange, it's just a very convenient, and you have to be so careful with this stuff because it can be such an orienting generalization that you make it more casual.
Right, it's a very broad brushstroke.
Very broad brushstrokes, just ways of understanding how people make meaning in their lives, and as human beings as meaning-making machines. We're doing that a lot, but we don't tend to see the ground of our meaning making. You know, you and I might, you know, decide that we think, you know, it's better to shop in Whole Foods and Safeway, but we don't necessarily go back to sort of the first principles of why we're looking at those things in
that
way.
Right. Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about what you're saying is these stages, if you will, they're really quite fundamental changes in our worldview. Because I want to differentiate them from, let's say, just picking up new skills or becoming a better public speaker or becoming more a more even talented, you know, manager. But these are, and that's why people differentiate between sort of the more conventional horizontal development versus vertical development, which we're just talking about, which these things are actually quite substantial shifts about how everything else you learn about get contextualized and what meaning we really make out of our life.
That's
right.
Know?
And so, and the progression through these stages can continue to happen even as we sort of reach this adult plateau. You know,
yes.
I think previously the thought was that, you know, you develop quite substantially from 2 to 5, from 5 to 12, and then, but you kind of slow down or stop at a certain time of adult maturity.
Right?
But what's actually interesting, and I think it's true in my own experience and, you know, just the people I know, is that this progression can't continue if there is actually an interest to develop. And it really kind of underscores that we're not these static personalities, but we are these dynamic processes that are continuing to evolve and deepen and expand.
That's right.
And usually I think another common feature of that progress, if you will, is that it's the ability to, I would say, to include greater and greater range of perspectives and opinions, and see more and more the and appreciate the different complexities. So, you know, when we start to get to these higher levels, we no longer need to see the world as one particular way, or we don't need to necessarily have it conform to our opinion. We can actually be aware of our opinion and then also be aware of all the other perspectives. And it's this really liberating progression that happens.
Yeah. I think the thing that Claire Graves saw was that as these dynamic unfolding humans, we're responding to a set of life conditions, and that the life conditions change. So each of these memes or levels or stages or spiral dynamics colors also has some kind of location point in history when it seems to be that the life conditions are there for that sort of development to come on board. You know, so for example, with the sort of countercultural and green movement of, let's let's say the 60s, 70s, it's like people noticed that we needed to start doing something different in how we oriented to the earth because our activities weren't sustainable. Now, historically, if you were, you know, living on earth at the time when there was only 10 million people, you weren't going to be worried about the earth's resources because they were effectively, they were unlimited at that point. Yeah. So there is both our kind of internal impulse to development, but I kind of like to remind people these are all situated in the context of what's the sort of life challenge that we're faced with.
Right.
And you and I are faced with this life challenge of we want to be entrepreneurial, we want to be self-authoring, we want to have meaningful and fulfilled lives. We know that money is important and it's the tool and currency of how things happen and get done. We want to have time to do inner work and we want to create the kind of world that we really want to live in, noticing that we have finite resources, we have a global imbalance of power, we're oriented towards maybe social justice and environmental justice. And we're trying to sort of hold that in our approach to our lives. And that, I think, is one of the pressures on, you know, creating a kind of integrative or integral life, is that we kind of want all those things. And yeah. You and I may want it differently as Enneatype 7s. We may want to include in a certain way. But I think there's a fundamental set of challenges that, you know, you and I, probably most of the people that we gravitate towards, have some version of those challenges they're wrestling with, that they can't look to their mum and dad. They can't look to the culture at large. They can't look to history. So they've got to kind of, you know, lean in and work the edge forward in their lives, which is exciting and it's challenging.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and just to sort of recapitulate a little bit on your entrepreneurship question, like, why would I want to be an entrepreneur building a big business? Like, what, when you get really clear about what is the motivation, if I don't have any deficiency needs, like I need to be someone, I need to impress, or I need to feel like I'm worth something, then the question about why I start a business and who I start a business with and what that business does and how we structure it seems to be much more open. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. There's less of anxious energy around it. It's actually...
Yeah, it's not fear-driven.
Yeah, exactly. We can become actually more thoughtful about it, which really also, in my experience, knowing when to rest and when to act, you know, there's actually... I think that's really powerful. I think Peter Thiel actually writes about that in 2-1, about how, in his opinion, there's too many people doing startups and not enough people doing startups that matter, you know, because
yes.
I think it just becomes this, you know, the tech startup prospect, a very seductive, very sexy thing that
yes.
people just love to jump in and feel like, oh man, it's so cool, you know, which
yes.
is great, that's a great impulse, but it's also, there's a way in which often I think we, what would serve us is to actually have greater pause and greater interest in what we're trying to create and what we're going to try to create it with and develop the relationships and really do the deep work that will may allow us to do all these things that we want to do much more gracefully and in a way that's much more aligned, sustainable, and fulfilling.
Yeah. I think in the entrepreneurial meme of our generation, having a successful tech startup is sort of like at the top in terms of what's venerated.
Right.
And also the chance that you have some kind of 10 to 100x or more kind of return, which
right.
is pretty hard to get in
yeah.
most other businesses in a short space of time.
Yeah.
And I think I've noticed in my own life, once you've been a founder, do you then, like, do I go and work for someone else? Is that, like, is that acceptable? Is that developmental? Is that regressive
right.
in my career?
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, so I think there's a lot of people that are getting experience of founding stuff way earlier in life somehow. And, I think that part of higher development and leadership development is this sort of coming into a situation where you're less identified, so you hold your identity less mm-hmm. closely. And founder can be this really solid identity that you want, you know,
yeah.
or that you're used to the freedoms that gives or the status that gives. So,
yeah, so you could be avoiding certain possibilities or resisting them subconsciously.
Yes.
That could actually help you catalyze your potential and growth and
yeah,
have you be
much
more fulfilled.
Yeah. Yeah. The founder's energy runs deep in an organization, in my experience. So it's almost like the founder dictates the culture,
yeah.
whether they are explicit about that or not. And there's actually something maybe harder, for me in any way, in my structure, I don't like to get too bogged down with stuff. So there's actually something harder about bringing a number of people together or joining something that already exists and wanting to have the cultural kind of impact when you're used to maybe just having that de facto happen because you found something. So I think I'm also looking into, you know, how may your edges get worked more when you, when you rub up against limitation. Mm-hmm. You're actually just willing to be with it and, you know, feel the frustration and feel the disappointment.
Yeah.
All those things that, again, again, as sevens in Enneatype terms, in Enneagram terms, that, who are a lot of founders, we don't like. We don't like limitation.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to limit me in any ways that I don't want them to limit me.
Right.
You know?
And I just want to name, I think there's another thing that, in my experience, is one of a really important developmental step is to really start to look at discomfort in a way that's not negative and it doesn't necessarily need to be avoided.
Yes.
I think that's really huge, and it's particularly huge in our culture, because I think there's often we just have a very fulfilled life and we feel very gratified. So whenever it starts to become challenging, we often are like, well, what am I doing wrong? Okay, well, wait a minute. I need to maybe change my career. You know, there's a way in which we often, there's a million of possibilities and quick fixes that exist, and so we often do things that are to avoid discomfort. But I really, like, I deeply found this in my experience that, and the entrepreneurial path is such a great tool for that. You get to really face into so many of your uncomfortable areas, and if we can actually just for a little bit to some degree start to relax into the discomfort, start to relax in the tension that we feel. Mm. It's a really transformative process. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. Yeah. And for those of us in the entrepreneurial world, we're often not really about suffering. You know, we may have some pain in the past that's driving us to be really driven, but often we're all about the mission and the vision and the new and the edge and the optimism, and it's going to be fucking amazing and let's do it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily have that much view for getting bogged down, getting slowed down in the uncomfortable emotions and uncomfortable processes and so on, you know?
Yeah.
And the tricky thing, and this is, I'm curious for you as, you know, this sort of startup shaman that you're orienting, is when people are in really early stages of building a business, it seems like that could be difficult to do too much developmental work alongside that in the current way that we know about building a business, which is like, you know, you have to really work above and beyond to kind of get something going, unless you're, you know, you already have a certain level.
Right.
Of
so starting a startup is difficult enough, right?
It is actually in my experience.
Yeah. No, that's a really great question, and it's something that it's a question that's quite complex and quite potent, and in some ways lies at the heart of a lot of the difficulties that we have and a lot of the dominant paradigm of especially tech startups, because while I really love its creativity and fast-paced nature, I really, really love that about the tech world. You can really just create big things and impact people in a matter of hours. You can build
designs.
Yes. You can have an idea tonight and, you know, have it be live and affecting people tomorrow morning. But what's I keep running into, and it's been I know it also well in my experience, is the paradigm of, you know, not enough time. There's not enough time. I just don't. I can't. I have to go fast. I have to.
Yes.
I can't invest into personal development. I can't invest in relationships. There's such a, and I think it's very much in the culture, in the tech culture. There's such a moving fast paradigm that's dominant. You know, and it's not. And of course, I'm not saying that it's entirely incorrect, because there's ways in which you do need to move quickly and catalyze a lot of energy about you and bring together investors and talent and momentum and even, you know, hype, you know, to make your project really stand out. So all of that I completely honor. And there is, I think, a very there's a very deep belief that in this not enoughness, and I think that causes very detrimental effects in terms of, you know, building things in a way that's often short-sighted or reactive, or, you know, there's just a lot of these cultural memes that we have, you know, like fail fast, you know, or do just, you know, do a lot of these things really quickly and very reactively. And so, and this question is a living inquiry for me. Like, I don't have a ready answer for it, but I do think that there's something about the other side, at least complementing that fast energy with a longer term view, where we really invest into ourselves and into the relationships and into developing a mastery and you know, what would it mean for us as entrepreneurs to really take the long term view, to really see our mission beyond just the particular product we're building, particularly the company that we're building, but what would it mean for us to, like, what would we do if we had an infinite amount of time? How would we, it's a question I've posed to all of us, how would we run our companies if there wasn't a time pressure, if we didn't have to execute quickly, if we didn't have to raise a lot of money quickly? What would that allow us to do, and how would we change our attitudes, our actions day to day? I think that's a really questions to us to explore.
It's almost like unpicking some of the cultural assumptions of entrepreneurship,
right?
Because there's another assumption, which is you should grow a business. You know, you should grow, scale as quickly as you can, to some extent, serve more and more people. And is life really asking you to do that? You know, I think there's just an embedded idea that if you have a decent business and it's working well in Berkeley, why would you not go to scale? And if really, wouldn't you just want to be in touch with your guidance or your deeper sense of what was wanting to happen? And sure, if you're getting, you know, calls from all around the world, we have to have this in our community, that's one thing, but that's different than kind of stacking the whole deck with massive venture capital in order that you can operationalize rapidly. You know, and so, you know, again, I think that's where something like, you know, the kind of spiral dynamics or the kind of worldview that you're in will change that. What would it be like if we had a generation of entrepreneurs that felt entirely nourished and satisfied in their own experience of themselves? Like, what would they create? Mm-hmm. How would that look different? Mm-hmm. My sense is that a lot of us, and I think I probably have my version of this, is that we're creating from deficiency in a certain way. Like, life isn't quite enough or exciting enough, or and of course the gift that we want to bring in the world, the vision that we have, which is of a better world, is also somehow backed by our sense that now isn't quite enough, and that is subtle to unpick some of that stuff.
It's very subtle, and it's complex. There's no right answer, there's no one answer, you know?
Yes.
I think that the inquiry is what's really important, but you know, I think we are just so privy to, or sorry, not the privy, we are so affected by the cultural norms in, for instance, in the tech entrepreneurial world. When we're going to become, to start a company and become a tech startup, there's a way in which we sign up for a lot of these norms, and we kind of absorb them. Everybody we talk to, your advisors, your investors will often reinforce these particular beliefs about how things should be.
Yes.
And what's fascinating about it is this phenomenon of tech startups is quite young. It's 20 years old, really.
Yes. You know?
And so a lot of the norms that have formed are still quite young, and are not necessarily the deeper wisdom that other people, other industry, other cultures may have. We have to think critically about what we're doing and why.
Yeah, it's almost like we're talking about the self-authoring individual, where you get to look at, okay, you know, I had this upbringing, I had these experiences, and how do I really want to live my life in a way that's deeply congruent with who I am? And I think there's such a thing as a self-authoring company that says, okay, I get all these memes are out there, but what, given who we are, what really makes sense for us as a way of doing our business? You know, do we just want to assume that the founders are going to generate all the wealth if the business does well? You know, is there something else that wants to happen? Do we want to do holacracy? Do we want to have a much more distributed way that we make decisions? And I think it's all that architecture is actually up for grabs in a certain way. Mm-hmm. You know, and let's also remember that when you're doing a startup, sometimes you just need to get a product out and start making some money, because if you run out of money, you're kind of done. So it's not always easy, but I sort of feel like in entrepreneurship, some of the deeper thinking can happen between ventures. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I feel like I've had a lot of time away from that coalface to really think about who I am and how life is and kind of what I want to express in the world. And a sense if I were doing another startup, I would be starting from a pretty different situation than my previous one.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
And for you, orienting towards developing entrepreneurs, I think it's some of those gaps, which is the kind of sweet spot. People, have, you know, maybe they've made a little bit of money, they've got something that buys them some time, they can be in a deeper inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's different than when they're actually in the under the gun to get something shipped. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I really love, like we said, what does it mean to build a company from abundance, from a place of wholeness, mm. where we're, you know, we don't need anything from the world. We're here to be generative. You know, I notice even just my body, I relax when I just feel into that. You know, it just seems it seems like it ought to be possible. You know, and I would love to live in that kind of world.
Mm. Well, typically when you get talking to founders, it's about, you know, what is your vision and what do you want to have happen, which is different than, you know, what is life calling for me, what does life want from me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Just maybe to have a bit about you for the listeners, you know, what are the kind of things that you're doing right now, what kind of things are you excited about, and, you know, how do you think you can serve some of the entrepreneurs?
Mm. Well, I love the coaching work that I do. I nearly always end a coaching call feeling more like enlivened about life and humans and connection. I would encourage any entrepreneurs that have any orientation towards going inwards and inner work to check it out. You know, entrepreneurs probably do have a disproportionate influence on culture. And more entrepreneurs coming from a non-ego deficient place would make a big difference in culture. So I would encourage that inquiry. Any entrepreneur that hasn't had some time to really just reflect and take some time to be with themselves, I think that's useful, because as entrepreneurs we tend to be quite oriented to the external. So the internal stuff I think is even more important. And I noticed that in spiritual work, a lot of the types that are drawn to spiritual work aren't entrepreneurs. You know,
are not?
No, I think so, because I think the entrepreneurs are out there running stuff, doing
right.
stuff,
right.
and it tends to be the more introverted types, I think, that predominate in spiritual circles.
Mm.
So, you know, if anyone knows the Enneagram, if you're a type 3, 7, or 8, I would really encourage you towards spiritual work, because there aren't so many of you, and it's important in culture that these memes are getting, you know, are interpenetrating and being worked in the creative friction of people's lives. The other thing that I'm excited about is global culture, global civics. Like, how is it true that our generation, like the first globally connected generation, like, do we have some possibilities that exist for us in terms of creating the world that we want that haven't existed previously? And I happen to think that we do. And you look at something like gay rights and the gay marriage movement, and how much that changed in 20 years to, like, police brutalizing homosexuals to nearly every state now either having adopted or being
yeah.
likely to adopt gay marriage.
That's
and
huge.
I just think we could, if we put our entrepreneurial attention together to some of these kind of humanities challenges, but not just from the Silicon Valley, like, all right, let's, how do we do a billion of this in this short time scale, but in a more kind of generative, deeper held context, I think we could be surprised what we can do together. And sometimes, you know, this is how life works. It takes the kind of older generation to kind of die off to some extent, and for the transfer of power and wealth to the new generation for certain things to become possible. And I think things like global peace, they actually have more chance in our generation than they have ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to encourage conscious people in our generation to mobilize their power in those directions.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating. I think I feel really inspired by what you're saying, and just also realizing how, you know, we're just creating the blueprints for what it means to be a highly conscious and high impact person in the world, you know, and groups in the world. And I think it's such an exciting time, because we're just beginning to turn our attention inwards and really understand what it means to really develop ourselves. What are the, you know, because it does, it's the science just like everything else that has quite quite concrete and valid observations and findings. And I think there's just an amazing amount of potential that can be unlocked that hasn't been unlocked, and that I think is much more powerful than, you know, business plans or coding skills.
Yes.
Like it's that is super exciting for me. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me, man.
Thanks for being here.